Thank you, Candace. Thanks, everybody, for having me here. So I was asked to give this talk on sort of today's and tomorrow's soil survey and how that is really very essential for developing soil health management systems. I came on board a year ago, so I've got these other two beat in terms of being with government for so long already. What I'm working on is to build a new division within NRCS. We actually got to hire 20 new people in soils. Now, those are all old FTEs. They were all vacancies that were reconfigured within the science and technology area. And, we are going to be collaborating very closely. I've been in conversation with a number of folks from the Soil Science Division, and I think there's just really a lot of potential to move things forward, to really make a difference on the ground, on our farms, for soil health. So, since it's a soil science crowd, of course, the obligatory, we got to define our terms a little bit here. Soil health and soil quality, the continued capacity of soil to function as a vital living ecosystem that sustains plants, animals, and humans. And I put soil health and soil quality there. I know that a lot of the time we like to split hairs and say, well, soil quality is different, soil health is different. Now we call it dynamic soil properties, but I think I would like to argue that we need to all understand each other's language and understand the audiences we're dealing with also. When we speak to our producers, really what they relate to is the term soil health. Now, when we go to soil quality, okay, soil quality maybe is a bit broader because it very much includes that soil type, that inherent soil quality where a mollisol is just always going to be a better soil than, you know, some enthesol that is rocky and there's not much there. It's going to be easier to produce things in. But in terms of talking about soil health, talking about the management influences that we as a human species are having on our soils, especially in agriculture, I think that it will work well for us to think of dynamic soil properties, soil health, soil quality as mostly interchangeable, because when we speak to our producers, that's really what's going to make the most sense to them, whereas we can pick apart the nuances a little more. So that's my view on that. We can discuss that ad nauseum, but I'll keep going from here. One of the really important parts about soil health is that it's that part of the soil's functioning that we can influence as a human species through our management. And a lot of that management influence, a lot of that functioning of the soil is biologically driven. And that's something that really just over the last couple of decades is becoming more and more clear. That is also what farmers are able to relate to. You know, farmers, when you speak about soil health, they can relate to it because they have health themselves. They know what it's like to be healthy or not healthy. They can start to think about all those microbes in the soil and what they are getting in terms of soil functioning from that life in the soil. We have a lot of huge challenges to deal with, and this is part of why I say, okay, we need to be able to speak to all the audiences. Several people have said we need to communicate better as a soil science community, and soil health I see as that interface. You know, all of these problems, population growth and the fact that that means we're building on our best agricultural lands and we're losing that, we need to produce more on less land. Climate change, more floods, more droughts, water quality, water quantity issues. These issues are all issues that, when it comes down to it, our producers are managing the functioning of our soils. So our producers are the ones that really are going to make the difference at the national scale, because agriculture is really where most of those environmental impacts either are resolved or get worse. So we need to very much be able to influence our producers and be able to get them to adopt practices that target these kinds of issues that we have, that help us resolve these problems. And the exciting thing is, I think we have that opportunity. I think there's a lot of win-win, because with soil health, if we help our producers, or a lot of producers are innovating on their own, they're at the leading edge and they're pushing us as NRCS and as all the entities working on this. As people implement soil health management systems, they are not only producing more food, producing more consistent food, addressing risk, you know, experiencing less risk in their systems, but they're also improving our water quality, improving greenhouse gas emissions, improving water quantity issues, etc. So these kinds of win-wins are what we have the opportunity to see in agriculture. All that list of benefits there, from improved nutrient cycling, pest suppression, water infiltration, less runoff and erosion and flooding. All these kinds of benefits are what we can get by producers managing their millions of acres that we have across the United States in better ways. How do we get there? I think we really need to get to a point where we mainstream soil health management systems adoption. You know, it can't be just that fringe. It can't be just those innovators. We need to get to the point where everyone's doing that. And we can do that if there's a known return on investment. And part of how we get to something like that is if we have really good, solid data on the ground that helps our producers understand, I am in this kind of a soil. It has an inherent functioning that is, you know, this particular way. But there's a huge bell curve. That functioning, I can manage that functioning to be very poor or very good. Here's my boundaries. So in terms of locally adapted soil health management systems, producers need to understand the inherent resource challenges and opportunities. There are certain things that they can't manage, they just are what they are, and that's where soil survey has come in. Then they need to identify and alleviate the dynamic constraints, the ones that they can actually have an influence over, and regenerate and maintain higher levels of soil health and functioning. So given a producer, given their current resource status, given their climate, given their production system, if they're not willing to change it, but arguably some of our producers are really going to have to change their production system, right? Which practices do they best use? What change can be expected? How fast is that change going to happen? What are the economic outcomes going to be? If we could tell a producer, if you implement this system, then five years from now, you're going to get a return on that investment, or 10 years from now. You know, every producer understands if they buy a combine, it's going to take them some years to pay it off, and then they'll start making money. Well, if you implement a new system, how many years is it going to take to pay that off? Is it going to pay off immediately? Is it going to take a major investment because the soil has been majorly degraded? So there are many successes out there right now. In NRCS, we've had a soil health campaign. We have gone across the country and found many producers that are those innovative producers that are really having success. We've put a lot of information out there about how to manage for better soils. But there's a lot more that needs to be done. So just briefly, in terms of what the Soil Health Division is staffing up to do, we've now got about 75% of our staff in place. There's a few more coming over the next year. We're going to be working critically on soil health training, advanced training, to really get our producers to a level where they know what steps to follow to get from wherever they are right now to where they want to be. That's going to involve soil health assessment. What's that status of that soil right now? Is it healthy? How healthy is it? What constraints does it have? Are the aggregates falling apart? Is it compacted? Is it biologically active? Is there a lot of disease? All of these kinds of things. And so we will be working with stakeholders, with partners, both within NRCS, with SSRA, and outside of NRCS, with a lot of partners interested in soil health. We're going to be working on standardizing soil health assessments. And this, again, is where some of Soil Survey will come in, and I'll get to that. Soil health management planning, helping our producers put these kinds of plans in place so that they know how to get from point A to point B. And really, ultimately, that big goal of soil health management systems implementation. That's where we need to go. So this is what the Soil Health Division will be working on, and there's, like many others have said, you know, none of us can do it on our own. We need to collaborate, we need to communicate, we need to give each other feedback, we need to pull all these efforts together and leverage the resources we have, because everything is limited. So today's soil survey, I'm going to completely and grossly oversimplify, because there's so many soil survey folks in the room that could spend a lot more time on this. I'm going to say, okay, the country is nearly completely mapped. And of course, we've heard that there's plenty of ways that we can improve on that, and I'll talk about one of those. Right now, it provides very critical information on the diversity and variation of inherent soil properties that really influence the production potential, the production risks that a producer faces, and also the implementation, the implications for management options. So for example, I spent some time in New Hampshire working with farmers on developing soil health management plans that they could then implement. And these three soils I'm listing here are from three different farmers, three different fields that we looked at. All of them were in agricultural production. Now, that first one, the Pillsbury sandy loam, poorly drained, 20 to 36 inches to bedrock, 0 to 18 inches to the water table, rated 7S, you wouldn't think of that as an agricultural soil, yet that producer was managing to grow vegetables, you know, was having some issues, and we talked about some of those. Some of them were manageable. That producer was one that had not had access to soil survey, actually didn't even know about it, was just a very small producer on the side who had some land that was in woods, decided to clear it and start farming that piece of land. Now, that producer would have probably had the ability to maybe cut down the woods somewhere else where the soils would have been better if they had just had access to soil survey as it exists right now. So already it's performing critical functions. The other two producers you can see, you know, rated in terms of farmland capability class 2E and 1. You look at that and you say, wow, those must be really incredibly good soils, especially that last one. Well, the current soil survey did not prepare those two farmers for these issues. We have big clods, we have barely any structure, we have dryness sometimes, we have compaction creating flooding, creating puddling at other times. You can see that compaction. That was the subsoil, the third picture on the right there. And you could really see, you know, those roots aren't going to go through there. We can also look at these soils and say, gosh, there's not a whole lot growing there right now. And that's part of our issue with our production system. Can we keep them more covered? Can we have more growing there at different times? Well, there's a lot of tricky issues to deal with. On the right there, you can see the attempt at getting a forage started. That is on that rated one soil. On that soil that farmer had bought, he'd bought 300 acres of mostly rated one soils, which are, by the way, very hard to find in New Hampshire. He was having a really difficult time trying to get forages established for his organic dairy. And the reason was because that soil was very degraded soil health-wise. So we did a soil health assessment there. And as you would expect, this had been a farm before. pH was in great shape, nutrients were in great shape, but once we measured biological and physical indicators, that's where we saw the constraints. From compaction to aggregates falling apart to basically almost no nitrogen mineralization, this farmer was having a really rough time. He ended up importing whey from some local cheesemaker and all sorts of stuff trying to get some kind of nitrogen mineralization going in the soil. This is the kind of information that we need to provide to our producers, and I think that soil survey has a big role that it could potentially play in showing what the potential is of a soil. This right here is a Buxton silt loam. On the left, we have a mixed organic operation with livestock and vegetables and grains, and basically they grow just about anything under the sun. And they manage with a lot of organic matter. They manage with a lot of those. On the right side, we have a conventional vegetable farm that hasn't input any carbon sources in a long time, has been tilling a lot, has been using just conventional fertilizer, so lacking carbon inputs, not feeding the underground livestock, as we like to say to farmers. And you can see the results, you know, a lot of crusting. That farmer is basically having a hard time making any money with sweet corn, never mind strawberries, that he used to grow. So these are the kinds of issues. Now, if we could tell a producer, look, you have the potential to get to an aggregate stability of X. You have the potential to totally alleviate your compaction, or you have an inherent PAM and you can't do that. You know, you have a potential to get to this level of nitrogen mineralization, to this level of pest depression, you know, whatever it may be with our indicators, we should be able to give a farmer a range. These are two pictures of the same soil type in Kenya. One just a couple of years out of primary forest, the other for 80 years out of primary forest, with corn on corn on corn with no inputs, right? So we have these kinds of incredible divergence based on our management, and tomorrow's soil survey really needs to be able to provide information on that dynamic aspect of the soil, because let's face it, we're in an anthropogenic age. There have been many people talking about sort of anthropogenic soil forming factor needing to be a part that's included, however it is that we want to call that. We really have some major needs. We need to define that range of functioning that's obtainable within a soil type. Can we give that as part of soil survey? If we standardize soil health measures, ideally we would have soil survey measuring the same things that are made available by our public and private labs. Because if we can give a range, we can give somebody an idea of what they can attain or what really is rock bottom, and Private and public labs also make that available, so a producer can sample their soil and say, you know, where am I at, and then compare it to what the potential is. Now they've got some information to go on. We can provide that site-adaptive interpretation that really allows them to understand where they're at, and then provide them good recommendations for changing to a new system. So one example, I came from Cornell, so I helped develop the Cornell Soil Health Assessment. So that's the example you see there on the bottom. You basically have measured values that are interpreted through a set of scoring functions that were developed by a large team of folks. The Soil Management Assessment Framework is at the core of that. Some of the indicators in the Soil Management Assessment Framework are already being used as small parts of soil survey. I think there's a long ways we can go. And then that can be translated into a report that makes sense to a producer. You know, here's your measured value, here's your rating, here's what that means about soil process functioning, and finally, here's a recommendation for how you fix these different issues. We need status assessment. We really kind of don't know where we're at soil health-wise in the country right now. What is the state of the health of our nation's soils? How poor are we? How degraded are we? How long is it going to take us to get from where we are right now back to fully regenerated, healthy soils that can actually meet all of the challenges that we've got coming our way? A lot of those functions are biological, and we're not measuring those as most of soil survey right now, but that's a critical piece of how our soils function for what we need them to do. So we need to incorporate that. We're in the design phase. This is, you know, I'm throwing this up there. It's one of the pieces that has gotten discussed. Having a statistically representative set of points across the country that a number of people in SSRA have worked on, having the ability to return over the course of 100 years to look at what's happening, to look at how things are changing. I'm seeing some smiles. Maybe the concepts are evolving already. You know, we obviously need to have more discussion. But being able to represent the country with some points to see where are we at right now and how fast are things changing is a critical thing that we need to move forward with. How exactly we're going to do that? Well, we're going to be discussing that and hopefully figuring that out. Ultimately, the really important thing for our producers is that we provide them with information on what practices will help them economically regenerate their soils. That needs to be informed by locally adapted information that can be locally interpreted. We really actually have that information in place. Right now, yeah, we can give somebody some really good principles, and I would argue that these are really good principles. You know, minimizing soil disturbance, maximizing diversity, keeping living roots in the system, and keeping the soil covered, those are all pretty important things, but when we think about a lot of our agriculture, how are we actually going to make that happen? It's going to be really tricky, and maybe in some systems it won't work at all. Maybe we get really creative about how we make it work. But specifically adapting these kinds of principles and seeing how far can we take them, you know, not complete no-till, but how can we reduce tillage? There's so much diversity we can introduce. How do we do that? Do we do it through cover crops? Do we do it through animals? Do we need to inoculate? Do we bring in different composts? Who knows? Those are the details that we need to figure out. But in order to really give somebody a good idea of what they should be doing, we need to understand what the status of their soils is, what the constraints are, whether they are tillage addicted, and if they went cold turkey to no-till, their system would fail. Well, we need to know that if that's going to be the case so that we don't give a producer poor advice. So, sort of concluding here, temporal interactions between those inherent and dynamic soil properties are critically important, and those interact with management. And I think that really represents the future of an expanded set of soil health and soil survey products. You know, what if we could have soil health survey that's available online? What if every producer could go online and see, okay, this is my soil type, and here are the options for what I have? Tomorrow's soil survey is really essential for helping us develop and promote better adoption of locally adapted systems. And those need to be economical. We have a lot of information that we need to continue to collect. So, thank you very much. I would love to have some discussion. This is really just a conversation starter. I don't know if I have any time, but I'll be around for a bit.
We have time.
Yeah, wondering if there's been any discussion about what the appropriate kind of unit of comparison is. Is it the soil series? Is it some sort of different taxonomic group? Seems like a soil series is going to be a headache to start with.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So the question is what the appropriate level to start with is. Is it a soil series for which you have to define these ranges, or is it broader than that? There's been a lot of discussion in a lot of different groups, so I'll say a few things for conversations I've been part of, and then other people feel free to chime in. So far, you know, one really simple way that you can start, at least for the topsoil, which is what the farmer mostly manages, is to say, okay, well, we can split things into textural groupings because texture really influences things a lot, and we can split things into regional groupings. So, you know, some part of the Northeast, maybe the New England region, and then down further south, you know, Mid-South region, and then sort of the Southeast, and then moving over into the country, sort of splitting up the country that way. That way you could get sort of a first cut where we have something that is at least more reasonable than what we have otherwise, and it's not as rigorous as having to have a scoring function for every single soil type, which, yes, that will be a bear to actually collect all those data. So there's those options, and then we can go more in depth. I'm wondering what other folks think. I know that the Soil Biology Working Group had a lot of discussions about these kinds of things. So
I'm not sure we got to that part of it. I know SMAS does it at the soil suborder.
Any other thoughts on that one? Yes?
Yeah, at the beginning of your talk, you told us something that most of us already know, and I don't mean that as a criticism of your talk in any sense at all, but you reminded us that NRCS is saying that soil surveys are essentially done, or pretty close to it.
No.
That was
like I said, I grossly oversimplify what all of the soil survey folks know much more detail about. So it's not done. It's there is a map there for most of the country, but there's a lot of needs for improvement.
So we've gone through mapping, and current mapping is nearly complete. Correct?
I think so. Right? I mean, that's kind of the message I've gotten everywhere. Initial mapping.
Okay, call it initial mapping. But then at the as your talk went on, of course, you talked about tomorrow's soil survey. Now, given this, what could be interpreted as a seemingly sort of a contradictory context, how does NRCS, as a federal agency, make the sell to Congress for continued funding?
That is a very good question. I think for the soil health part, there is excitement all across the United States, well beyond NRCS right now, about the critical need to improve the health of our nation's soils. And we do not have that additional data layer, if you will, on soil survey really anywhere. You know, we don't know. I mean, there's the soil management assessment framework that has some of those indicators, and by region we have some ideas. You know, there's a lot of other indicators that have been put out there as these are critical indicators that might need to be looked at. So that piece isn't there, and then, you know, I think the soil survey folks probably make much better points than I ever could about the critical need to update the survey in various other ways. Soil survey is at the base of a lot of different companies, a lot of different efforts that are out there using those data and using them in ever newer ways. And so I think that the argument to Congress, to be made by people other than federal employees, is very much, you know, we need these data, and the need for it, if anything, is increasing rather than decreasing, because more and more people are realizing just how critical soils are to everything that keeps us alive. So
I guess my point is then that those of us in this room can understand the details and so on of this kind of a context, but it can certainly be misinterpreted very easily outside of this room.
Mm-hmm. So clearly, you know, again, a message for that communication. You know, we need to communicate well about why it is that soils are important and why the data that we collect are critical, and why we need to keep on improving them as our ways of managing our agricultural lands and our other lands are changing and becoming increasingly more science-driven and technology-driven.
Thank you. We can hold further questions after our next speaker.